Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. We welcome you, whatever time and wherever in the world you are listening. We are pleased you have found us. You are now listening to Inside the Bunghole, a podcast taking you on a journey through wine. Together, we will learn more about this wonderful elixir of life. So raise your glass to welcome your hosts and partners in wine, Pam and James. You are now Inside the Bunghole.
Welcome to another episode of Inside the Bunghole. We're very excited today. We are sitting with Adrian Bolshoi from Brick Barn Wine Estates in Buellton, California, which is the Santa Ynez Valley. And we're in one of their beautiful wings, one of their private tasting rooms. It's stunning in here. We'll be posting lots of pictures. I'm with James Salisbury, my partner.
Hello.
And Adrian, welcome.
Hi, thank you guys very much for having me.
We're excited. We're very excited.
I'm excited too.
I think we met you probably 4 months ago or five. Maybe a year ago.
It was definitely over a year ago, yeah.
Yeah.
And pre-COVID.
Pre-COVID. And you were filling some big shoes because I know there was a winemaker here for years and years. And so that's tough, man.
It was.
That's tough showing up being the new guy. How do you think you're faring right now?
I think I'm doing pretty well, and especially all the good scores that we get from the wines that we submit to get ratings and stuff that, you know, speaks very loud of all the good job that I hope I'm doing.
How do they even find someone like yourself to be the winemaker here? And
so
what's the process?
The thing is, it was like pure luck. because initially I was hired here as a cellar lead, so I was the guy in charge of like making all the wines and like the cellar, like making sure that everything goes smoothly, runs properly. And then the winemaker suddenly leaves in like 2 months after I got hired. And when our general manager and all, you know, they were looking for a person to replace him, and they start looking through the resumes, it's like, look at this, like we have a perfect person that works here. Well, then we have to look for anyone. He's already here. So, and that's how I got the position.
So you were just quiet. They didn't know you had these skills.
They didn't.
Winemaking skills.
Exactly. They did not.
A ninja winemaker. Tell us about, first of all, we're going to have some, tell us just to tease everyone, what are we going to be drinking today?
So we're going to be trying three wines today. We have Chardonnay that was aged in concrete tank. We have a 900-gallon concrete tank in the winery. It's very nice wine. It pairs so nice, like with like the minerality that comes from that tank, and the acidity from the Chardonnay is just a perfect balance. It's very, very nice. Then after this, we're gonna try our Cabernet Franc as a 2017. We call it Fatalist. So this is the top of the list of the best wines that we make out of this vineyard. And it's only two barrels produced of this wine. It was aged for 3 years.
Wow.
In a Russian oak. And we're gonna finish with a late harvest Viognier.
Wow.
I love sweeter dessert wines, and I'm very excited about this wine.
I am too, we're staring at it. But I wanna get back to you, and I wanna talk about how did you end up here? And then also tell me, how did you start off with wine making?
So I'm from a small country called Moldova, which is in Eastern Europe. It was one of the former USSR countries.
A shout out to our Moldova listeners, by the way.
Yeah. So it's very small. It's sandwiched between Romania and Ukraine. The population of Moldova is about 3 million people. So it's very, very tiny, but with a huge history in winemaking.
Because of the temperature, the climate?
The climate, exactly. The climate is just very favorable. It's very nice. We have very good, also fertile soils, and that would like makes the grapes very, very delicious, and they grow perfectly in our area. So historically, there's like proof that they've been making wine on that area for over 5,000 years ago.
Wow, we'll have to try some Moldova wine.
Yes, so So in Moldova, it's, as I said, it's very big in winemaking. A lot of the wines that were produced in Moldova, they used to be exported. Russia, during the USSR, Russia used to be our like main market for export. About a third of all the wines that were made in the country were made in home, like at home, by home winemakers. And my grandparents were one of those home winemakers. So I grew up helping them, you know, making wine my entire life. I don't even remember when we start, like, when we start making wine, or like when I jumped in the process.
So you grew up with your grandparents making wine.
That's right.
Now, did they make it for family and friends?
Family and friends. In Moldova, they were saying, if you don't have your own wine, that means you're like losing your, you know, your time. Like, you cannot be like not have your own homemade wine. Like, everybody is. Nobody's buying wine in the store. Like, all the wines that are produced, majority of them are either the tourists will buy them or they're exported.
So was it good?
At that time, I thought it was great.
Was there competition between families, or?
Yes, obviously it was, you know, everybody wanted to show off a good quality wines. You know, everybody was like, oh, look, try my wine. It's phenomenal, you know? And then I were like, oh, you have to try mine. And every family would have like their own like special like recipe that they would not wanted to share with, you know, each other.
Were they mostly whites, reds?
Reds. Reds would be the, you know, most of the wines that are produced. Some of the people have some whites, but majority of them are reds.
It's a red. What grape was growing really, really well in Moldova?
There's a lot of grapes that grow, you know, very nice in Moldova. There's some, my grandparents would have some, a typical Moldovan grape, which we call it Busuyuaco, which was like, it's very, very nice and floral grape. So they would, you know, ferment them and they would make the wines, and they would be aromatic wines.
So as a young age, you learned the process, science behind it, the fermentation, the next step, the straining, the bottling. So then when did you take it up a notch?
So after I graduated, my high school, I decided to go and get a winemaking degree from a Polytechnical University of Moldova. So this is when I was like, I'm going to do that, you know, again, because winemaking is such an important thing. So I was like, I have to do it. So I graduated winemaking in 2011. So I have a bachelor's degree, and right after graduation, got on a plane and I came to USA, and especially like my final destination was Bealton.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember.
Welcome to the USA.
Yes, exactly. I remember when I first, when I got here, I landed in LAX. And I'm like, okay, from LAX, how do I get to Bealton? I mean, it's a far drive. It's like, you know,
2.5 hours.
Yeah, 2.5 hours, 200 miles.
Yeah, that probably takes you all across Moldova.
Exactly. So, and I'm like, okay, how do I get there? So I go to the information, because, you know, they have the information station, and I talk to the person that's like, hey, I need to get to Bealton. And they look at me and they're like, what? I'm like, Bealton? And then I'm like, okay, in my head, I'm like, probably I pronounced it wrong. Let me spell it down for him. So I take a piece of paper and a pen, I spelled it down. He looks at me, he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, and you know, like, I was very frustrated at the time, because I was like a 16-hour flight. You know, I landed in LAX and they don't know where Bealton is. I'm like, your information, how come you don't know where Bealton is?
Yeah, and you're thinking, because of your wine background, everybody should know where Bealton is.
I thought so too.
You're like a hitman on your way to Bealton.
Exactly. So finally, I was like, okay, you know, I knew I have some, you know, the phone number, contact information for the winery. So I found a payphone and I called the winery.
That's a challenge in and of itself, trying to use a payphone in a foreign country.
So there was a winery that sponsored me. That's how I got here. So it was a winery that sponsored me for a visa to come here. So I called the winery and they were like, oh yeah, like, we're legit. You know, that's not a prank. That's not, you know, they're like, you have to look for the shuttle. So And then I see the guy from the information running towards me with a book. He's like, I found it. I was like, okay, great. So he gave me the phone number of the shuttle. So I called him and they dropped me at the Motel 6. And I had to walk with two huge suitcases all the way to the winery.
Oh, that's a movie.
That is a movie.
I'm telling you, it's a movie.
It's definitely a movie.
We're going to take a break and we're going to come back and try one of the wines. And as we're going through the wine a little bit, we're going to pick back up on his story too to
okay,
complete
we'll
it
because be right
it's going
back.
To be awesome. All right, thanks.
And then we're really done.
If you want to know more about Inside the Bunghole, join us on all our social media platforms. You can get a revisit and view all the latest posts, giveaways, and information on this podcast. Simply search Inside the Bunghole on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Like, share, and subscribe. Leave a comment. We would love to hear from you. Or you can email us at insidethebunghole@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and visit our website at insidethebunghole.buzzsprout.com, where you can always find our latest podcast and past episodes. Cheers!
Welcome back. We're sitting here with Adrian Bolshoi from Brick Barn Wine Estates and talking a little bit about his past and his wine knowledge.
His
and
journey.
How he got it, his journey.
Yeah.
And we're going to be tasting some yummy wines. I think we're going to start with the Chardonnay.
Yes, let's start with the white wine.
Yep.
So that's a 2019 Chardonnay. We call it Beton, which from French that translates as concrete because it was in a concrete tank.
That seems to be a new thing, this concrete cask.
It is. That's correct.
And boy, that sounds good in my headphones too.
Yeah.
a lot of the people start using concrete eggs or concrete amphoras for the to age some of the white wines.
Cheers.
Cheers. Yes. So.
So it's very pleasant, you know, has very nice aroma.
Yeah.
When we think about the Chardonnay, I'm like, you're like, oh, the Chardonnay shouldn't be that aromatic. But no, this one, it's...
It really jumps at
you. Yes, it does.
And I'm glad it's... I'm not a big fan of oaky Chardonnays, oaky buttery. I like the concrete.
Tell me about the soil here in Buellton. A lot of limestone?
So we have, like, on our property, we have two different soils. So if you look around the winery, those are all the white grapes growing here. And the soil here is sandy. So this Chardonnay was, you know, on the sandy soil. Then all the reds, they're basically behind the winery, top of the hill. They grow all the red grapes that are planted over there. And the soil is more, we have more darker, more minerals, more some limestone, some like, you know, just more of a like, more full and rich in minerals.
Interesting. The sandy.
The sandy soil.
It's a very fruit. You know, I, that expression, fruit forward. But boy, this just leaps out in your nose and on the palate. It's just.
I find it. And it might be because of the concrete cast.
I'm also nervous drinking this wine with you because you're the winemaker.
I
want to say the wrong thing.
No, there's nothing. The thing is, like, you know, when people are like
apples.
Oh, no, but when people say like, oh, I'm afraid to say the wrong thing, I'm like, there's no wrong
there
thing.
There is. Thank you.
Because every single person is different, and if you find apples and I find pear, none of us are wrong.
Right.
Like, it's everybody.
The palate
is different. Every single person is different.
Let me ask you from like Wine 101, someone that was to have wine. How would you approach it? Just walk me through how would you approach a glass of wine, to smelling it, to drinking it?
Yeah, when you first start tasting, you obviously have to look at the color, make
okay.
sure it's nice and clean and there's no, doesn't have any like, you know, anything
funk
and floating funk in the glass, right?
And this is beautiful color.
It's very nice, very yeah. beautiful color.
Okay, so the look,
so the look is visual, that's the first, and after this is the aroma. So you have to smell, and the first thing that comes to your mind, it's going to be correct. And there's nothing wrong on it.
Now, did you always have a good palate? I mean, were you?
No, you have to
you
have to develop it. You have to taste every single time, and you have to make sure that you don't taste only your wines. You have to taste other people's wines. You have to develop your palate. You have to, you know, taste as much as possible.
That's why most sommeliers.
This is going to sound weird, but a tortilla.
Tortilla.
A flour tortilla.
So
That's what came to mind.
Okay. Probably the reason where you smell this is probably from the yeast after the fermentation.
Right.
If there was any yeast that, you know, this wine had, like where the sediment in the barrel or in the tank, if there was any, you know, contact of that, that you will smell that yeasty, bready tortilla.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. So the taste, I mean, the smell. Okay.
Yeah. And after this, then the taste. And then you just, you know, a lot of people, they squish it on their mouth, you know, and they see how does it taste on the beginning of the palate, like when the first impression and then the last impression. You know, how does it linger? What are the flavors and the, you know, what do you still pick in, out of this wine?
Pam, taste it. What do you think?
I'm saying a little bit of minerality.
There's a lot of minerality, and that minerality comes from the tank. And when you open that concrete tank, when it's empty, it's raw concrete. You just put your hand, and it's raw concrete.
I'm getting a lot of way in the back. It's attacking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that is the acidity from the wines.
Yeah.
And that's what we were talking earlier about, the balance between the minerality and the acidity. And it's very, very pleasant.
And then right at the end, I just got a little nice on the tip of the tongue. It's just there. It's good. It's a good job. Mm. Are you proud with this one? You happy with it?
And this is a 2019, happy. Yes?
2019. And this is all 100% me.
What do your grandparents think about this one?
They'll probably wouldn't like it.
Because it should have like sediment in it.
Yes. Oh. So also the other difference, you know, between home winemaking, at least in my country, and the, you know, commercial winemaking is that the home winemaking, there's nothing. You don't add anything into those wines. You have the grapes, press them, that's it. No yeast, no sulfites, no clarification, you know, because we have to do all those things. Like, we have to do heat different stabilization, cold stabilization. So this way, when you take a bottle of wine, you put it in your fridge, there's no sediment. We have to do it here. When, you know...
When it's at home.
It's at home. It's, who cares? Just drink it.
Drink it.
What's the old put the balloon over a bottle and it rises?
This is during the fermentation. So if you have something that's fermenting, it's basically there. So the CO2 that, you know, evaporates. So
which is a byproduct of the yeast breaking down.
Sugars.
Remember, the sugars
breaking
yes.
down.
Yes, yeah, the yeast eating the sugars, right?
And yes.
When we used to do the beer, remember we were doing
yes.
the beer
yeah.
for a while?
Yeah, the same thing. Yeah.
You know, everyone should try to make a wine.
Make something, yeah.
Do something, go for
just
it.
Just to play around with it.
Yeah. So tell me real quick, and then we're going to do the other wine and do another break. But so you're at the Motel 6 with two suitcases.
Yes.
Boy, I'm hearing like jazz, like blues music.
No.
So now you got to report to a winery.
The wine
sponsored
yes.
you, right?
This is all like before Uber was huge, too. You can't just...
There's no Uber Milton. You're a Milton. It's a small town.
So what happened? What next?
And I was also obviously very lucky because the wheels on both of my suitcases broke. So I had to carry... two huge suitcases.
With your life.
With my life, because I moved from one side of the globe to another side of the globe, right? Carrying all the way to the winery. So when I got there, and I was like, and they were like, oh, we've been waiting for you. Like, awesome. And I was lucky enough that, you know, I was very fortunate because they found a place for me to stay. So the host, she came over and, you know, she picked me up with a car. I was like, thanks God there's a car. she has a car, you know? So... It was nice, and I'm like...
And what was your first job? Well, what were you doing?
So my first job was a cellar hand. So I was doing everything that was needed in a cellar.
Like cleaning, rinsing.
Cleaning, rinsing, racking tanks, pressing grapes, receiving grapes, absolutely everything.
Putting the thief in the bunghole?
No, unfortunately not.
No. You have to graduate to that.
Yes.
So is that a good place for someone that really wants to learn winemaking to start?
It is.
At a winery to be just... in the galley, in a way?
You have to start from the bottom, obviously. Right. I believe that would be, you know, a huge help.
But you see a lot and you learn a lot.
You do, absolutely. Yeah. Because just going to school and learning a lot of stuff, but without having your hands-on experience, it's different. It's like not the same.
Yeah, you need to have that practical experience.
Are you at this level right now? Scared sometimes, like a prize fighter before he fights, even though it's Muhammad Ali, the night before, he like, so when you bottle it.
When you uncork it, is this like, going to be good?
It's a lot of responsibility you have. There's money behind you, man. I know. It's like, dude.
Don't scare me.
I know. So, but do you feel that pressure?
There's a lot of pressure, yes. Yeah. I feel a lot of pressure because also like depends on the years. Like last year in 2020, we had like two huge heat waves. You know, like here in Bulletin, the weather was over 120 degrees. You know, it was like, it was not good for the grapes. So I was scared at that moment because, you know, you're like, what do I do? How do I protect the grapes? Is it too late? You know, it's kind of like there's some moments that, you know, you get like more, especially when you know that there's money involved and they're not your money.
Right, right.
Now what do you do when you go through that? Like, what is your, do you rely more on your education?
Your education.
Or? Your fight plan.
This is when you rely a lot on your education and a lot of the chemistry that you study in, you know, in school. And you're like, okay, now that's when, you know, you have to figure out what are you going to do, how you're going to basically adjust or, you know, the wines.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So after that one, you were there, did you graduate a little bit in that winery or did you move on to another one?
I moved on to another one.
Okay. Yes. Same gig in a way, same responsibility, but then you...
So from that winery, I moved to Sonoma. Okay. And I spent a year in Sonoma. I was working for another winery that they did not, they were still considered a winery, but they were not making wine at that time. So they were doing a lot of very cool stuff by, like, they have filters. They will filter a lot of the wines. They would do, they have a ability to remove the alcohol from some of the wines. They would have the ability to remove the volatilic acidity, which is not good on your wines. This is when your wine kind of turns into vinegar or nail polish removal. That's when you can fix that.
So they were kind of doing some experimentation in
the
process?
It was not really experimentation because, you know, they already knew how to do it. So it was more of a fixing.
Fixing.
Fixing. A fixer. Yes.
A fixer.
They're, exactly. They're putting lipstick on a pig.
Well, it worked.
It worked. And you taste it and it's like, hmm. I was going to run back real quick and ask you about the wine we just had. And you named it. It's Concrete in French.
Beton. Yeah.
Did you get to name it?
Unfortunately, no.
Okay.
Just wondering. But we did have a brainstorm, so.
Okay, so it's like a collaborative.
It was a collaborative.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so working at that winery, and then where from
and
there?
And then from there, I came back to the area. So I was working, I got a job as an assistant winemaker in Lompoc.
Lompoc.
So I was working there for a small winery. The entire production was like, so we were producing 20 tons of grapes a year. That's like nothing. At my first job, we would produce 20 tons in like half a day.
Wow.
Yes. Here, it was an entire year. But the slots were very small. Everything was handcrafted. You know, you would just spend a lot of time babysitting every single cluster that you put in that, you know, into your fermenter.
Are you touching the bunghole at this time?
Yes.
You are.
That's the time when I finally got to do that.
Wow. So you got to like put the little thief in, taste it. Sample it and just start.
Yeah.
So that, tell me about that part of the winemaking.
So this is when I obviously, you know, I've learned about the difference in yeast, what yeast would do what to your wines. That's when I learned about the different barrels, what flavors, different toasts, like all those things. So again, in order to start to learn all of these things, you have to taste.
Yeah.
You have to taste every single barrel, you know, you have to see how does it develop. How does it, you know, with every single month, this barrel, every single barrel is going to be different. And then this is when you, then there's a time to make the blends and you taste them again and you kind of make like a little map on a piece of paper or in your head. I usually do both. And, you know, you're like, okay, this barrel is going to mix perfect with this barrel. This one has more like, you know, tannins, more sweetness, more like, you know, the more barrel taste,
yeah,
the burn of the toast of the barrel. And, you know, so it's, that's when you...
And you want them just to...
Just to like, yeah.
Gel together.
Are the majority, like what you're describing, is it kind of like the same grape in each barrel?
Yes.
And the barrel can maybe change it.
Yes, that's definitely 100% the barrel. It changes a lot. So like even here, you know, we have... some lots that are like 5 tons, you know, and then we put them all in the same lot, the same fermentation, the same yeast, the same everything. We just put them in different barrels. The barrels are going to be tasting completely different, the same wine.
So it's a blend of a single varietal.
Yes, of different barrels, basically.
Interesting. Huh. Interesting.
How long does it sit in a barrel, usually?
So the red wines we keep for about almost 2 years.
2 years?
Yes. So, and the next one that we're going to be trying, the Fidelist, that one is spent in the barrel for 3 years.
3 years?
Yes.
Wow. Well, should we take a break and then come back to the...
to the Fidelist?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
This is exciting. It's a giant bottle. It's,
oh my God,
it's massive. I took a photo
that's
of it.
That's the one, you know, well, you said earlier, that's the one you want to get into a bar fight with.
Yeah, that thing is a brutal... Okay, we'll take a break on it. This is exciting. Okay, you're tuned into Inside the Bunghole.
If you want to know more about Inside the Bunghole, join us on all our social media platforms. You can get a revisit and view all the latest posts, giveaways, and information on this podcast. Simply search Inside the Bunghole on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Like, share, and subscribe. Leave a comment. We would love to hear from you. Or you can email us at insidethebunghole@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and visit our website at insidethebunghole.buzzsprout.com, where you can always find our latest podcast and past episodes. Cheers!
Welcome back to Inside the Bunghole here at Brick Barn Wine Estates with Adrian Bolshoi. So you're going to pour us a very, very special wine right now.
Yes, this is our very special wine. It's a Cabernet Franc, and it's a, we call it Fatalist. So this wine was aged for 3 years in oak barrel. The oak came from Russia, so it's a Russian oak. The reason why we choose Russian oak is because the flavors that come from that barrel and the flavors that this Cabernet Franc is providing, it's just a very nice balance. They just marry together perfectly. So we are in a cooler area, so that means we're gonna have a little bit more spices in our wines.
And then the bottle, you said this is pretty pricey bottle.
Yes, it's a pretty pricey bottle. We sell it at $140. This wine was bottled by hand, was corked by hand, and the bottle is engraved, and everything was by hand and dipped in wax. Everything was like, it's a lot of hand labor.
Yeah, I saw it. And you said engraved and then painted.
And then painted. Yeah.
And then what? So it's a, I mean, it's a bottle you want to save.
Yes.
If there was a bottle to save.
Now, do you, let's talk, okay. I have two questions. One is, we didn't decant this. We just poured it straight from the bottle.
And you
and
think
also
something...
saving, but let's first address the decanting.
Okay, so decanting, you... if you would save, if you, let's say, would keep this bottle for another 10 years, you definitely have to decant it because over time that's going to form some sediment and fluctuation in temperature. So you have to decant it, and that decanting is going to help. And it also, that will help to aerate this this wine. So it will just, it will definitely help. But this one, yeah, this this Cabernet right now is from 2017. So it's been aged for 3 years. Was bottled like about like half a year ago, so it's a very young wine. There is no really need to decant it yet. You can do it if you want to do it. It will just help. It will just help to improve the taste of this wine.
Is this the first time you worked with Russian oak?
Yes, it is.
And
usually
how about here?
French oak is the most you know, wow, predominant one, and most of the barrels are coming either from France, and First, I met the Russian oak here at Brick Barn, and I fell in love with it. It's just very, very nice.
And how many times can you use that barrel?
So for this specific wine, we're trying to use it only once. So it's brand new oak.
Okay.
So we use it once, and then after this, so we age it for 3 years. After this, we put it in our regular Cabernet Franc program, which it's still a good barrel.
Sure.
Still very nice, but...
but for this particular wine, it's brand new oak.
Once, yeah.
And I smell, I'm getting a lot of plummy. That's what I'm getting.
That's what.
I have a shitty nose, though.
I tell you, the color is beautiful.
The color is beautiful.
The color is very nice.
Really nice.
A lot of dark fruit.
Yes.
And now when you taste it, do you feel the balance between that peppery, spicy
cinnamon
that you get? Yes.
Yes.
And the oak, you can taste the barrel. You can taste the balance between those flavors and the
boy, you wish you were tasting this wine right now.
You know, I gotta be really, this is kind of, it tastes like my grandparents' house, which is beautiful, because it was an old home in Long Island, mm-hmm. and it always had a smell of like banana peels and coffee grounds, and there was something creaky and beautiful about their home. And I don't know if you can make that into a taste, but that's it.
It's like a big warm hug.
It's dynamite. Mm-hmm. This is a wonderful one. Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, this is mm-hmm. beautiful.
So, tell me about, I guess that's I want to talk about
we'll
deep the bottles.
We'll talk about the bottle in just a minute. But saving it. Now, how long will it stay in the bottle? Should you keep it in the bottle?
You can keep it for another 10 years for sure. The Cabernet Franc, it's a type of grape that, you know, you can just keep it for as long as you want. It's just going to get better with
years.
And
are there certain grapes? I mean, I know that reds you usually keep longer. Whites you usually...
So whites you want to drink younger, fresher. The reds, Pinot Noir is usually not a grape that you want to keep for too long, because you risk of losing some of the freshness from the grape. Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Syrah, you can age for longer. Merlot, you can age those longer time.
That's, and do they get better with age?
They will just get better, yes.
Interesting.
The smell's
okay,
fantastic.
Okay, now you can talk about the punt.
Yeah. This bottle, I just break this bottle down one more time. I know it's engraved in that, but like the punt on it is probably the deepest one I've ever seen on a bottle.
It just looks good, you know. This bottle was made in France.
Okay.
So it's a French bottle, and it's just very nice, extra heavy bottle. We just wanted to make sure that, you know, you can
feel
it when you have it in your hand. So it's a heavy one.
So you knew when we're going to bottle this baby, you want to make sure there's a special bottle.
Exactly.
And yes. You go to a catalog, and you look up, there's a bottle company, and it's in France. There's a whole company making bottles out
there's,
there.
Absolutely, yes. We have distributors that we work with, so they're the one that are, you know, buying bottles, corks, capsules, whatever we need for our bottling supplies.
See, that's a whole show right there.
I think mm-hmm. the bottle alone is like $100. I mean, just it's a beautiful
bottle. Oh, my goodness.
Bottle.
This is a
that
great...
gets Best Bottle Award, by the way.
It is beautiful.
It's a great, good job.
Like, yeah. And just the more it opens, the better it tastes. Like, yeah. You know, so that's the decanter would do it right away for you.
You know what? It's that oak.
Now, is this a food wine? Would you pair this with food? Can you, you know, is this a drink it by itself?
You pair it with sex.
Yes.
Yeah, I was about to say you pair it with a friend, but yeah. It's very nice. I mean, you can pair it with food, or you can just enjoy it, you know, on its own. Like, it depends on the mood you are.
Spices.
Because it's very nice, you know, drinking on, like, on its own without any food. But obviously the food will just make it better.
What do you think of this?
I love it.
Yeah.
It's like 10 out of 10 or 11 out of 10.
When do you enter this and see if some awards come out of it, or is it done that yet, or do you do that?
I don't think we're going to do this with this wine.
Okay.
Yeah.
So whoever's listening.
Well, there's 200, you said 200 bottles?
No, it's two barrels, which was like 500 bottles. Yes. That was the entire, you know, amount that was bottled, and we're probably not going to be sending this to any ratings or anything.
Are these sold out right now, or are they?
Almost.
Almost.
Yes. And we have, I believe it's one or two bottles per person that is interested in buying, and we're almost sold out.
We fell in love with Brick Barn through our producer, Mr. Don Maselli, giving you a shout out. Wish you were here. I bet you wish you were here.
Yes.
And I know that he was, because he's the director of special events up at the Ritz-Carlton in Rancho Mirage. And I know that, like, he couldn't wait to bring us to Brick Barn. First of all, the story of the whole This used to be a horse barn.
Yes, yes. So used to be horses here. The owner of Brick Barn, he used to have Arabian horses, and I think he had a world champion that lived here. And so then Wofford, all the horses died, and you know he didn't want to have more horses here. He just decided to turn into the winery.
Hey, let's make it a winery.
Yes. And if you can see over here, those are actual, like, you know, the stalls. from horses.
Yeah. You'll have to take some pictures of that.
And this is original brick as well that you see all over. So
this is now your happy place. So you ended up where you were, playing with the bunghole and all that, and eventually then came to Brick Barn.
Brick Barn. Yes.
And then they found out that you were right under their nose.
Yes.
So how did you end up here?
Well, I was looking for more opportunities because at that winery that I was working was small, as I mentioned before, and I knew that I would never become a winemaker there because I was, you know, the owner was the winemaker. So I needed more opportunities. So I saw the job that was available here and I applied and I got it, you know, and I was very lucky. And after the old winemaker left, they offered me, they're like, okay, we're gonna put you on a trial first. They're like, we wanna see how you're gonna do. And we'll see how the things are gonna go, you know, and if we like you, you're gonna be the winemaker. And then it was very stressful for me because I remember it was July. The grapes are already there. They're going through viration. We're gonna start picking soon. And my winery was still full of wine. I still had wine to be bottled. And you want to bottle your wines before you start picking the grapes. Because once you start picking the grapes and you have fermentation, our bottling line is, we have our own bottling line. So it's in the same room as the tanks that where we have the fermentation, and there's yeast in the air. You do not want to have, especially if you have like a dessert wine, like we do the 2019, you don't want to have any of those yeast going to your bottle because there's a high chance of contamination of your wines. And if you do that, you basically lose the entire batch.
So they gave you this. They're here you go.
There you go.
Here's a test for you.
So it was very stressful in the beginning for me because, you know, like I had to catch up. So I did bottle a lot of wines before the harvest. I was able to save some. And then once the harvest was over, there was no more fermentation. I was able to bottle the rest of them that I had to. So the first year was a little bit of chaos. Then the 2020, which was last year, that one was more smooth because I was on the truck. I knew what I had to do and just get it done.
Man. In the right order.
Right order, right time.
Wow.
Yes.
So this is your happy place, right?
That is my happy place. I'm very happy. You know, it's amazing. Like all the people that I'm working with, they're all very nice. I know the management is very nice. So it's a lot of fun, and you know, it's just great.
A good family.
Buelton's been good, and you have a child too, I understand.
Yes, I have a son. His name is Luca. He's gonna be 14 months soon.
Wow!
Isn't that crazy? How
God, there's it is.
We God, met there's you. We were talking about it during the break. We met you. I think it was like
thrown in
weeks,
the fire.
Weeks after the baby was born.
Yes.
So
yes.
Now he's walking.
Oh, he's walking. He's talking. He's running around. He's doing all different crazy stuff. He tries to put everything in his mouth.
We were doing
some yard work last night with my wife, and he found some snails, and he ate two snails.
Well, that's escargot.
I was like, escargot.
And what would you pair that snail with? Like like a milk? Like a bottle?
Breast milk or bottle milk?
Let's try the dessert wine.
Try the dessert.
Yes.
So the dessert wine, it's made out of Viognier. Brick Barn never had any dessert wines until 2019. So this is the first time that Brick Barn carried any of those wines.
And Viognier is your favorite.
It's your favorite. I love Viognier as well because it's very nice, very aromatic, and it's very, very
floral. And here it's being a dessert. Wow.
Yes.
And what's the process of making just a V&A, a nice wine, to a V&A.
So you have to let it hang longer. So usually when we, you pick the regular one, the regular V&A, the sugar content in the grapes, it's measured in bricks. Usually I'm looking for 24, 25 bricks. And this one was 36. So you have to let it hang way longer. So if you pick your V&A, let's say in September, then you pick the late harvest in like close to the end of October.
What if it hangs too long?
That's lovely.
There's a math behind it.
It's going to be fine. Even if it's going to stay long, you're just going to have less yield, less, you know,
less
extraction
juice
out of this. Yeah. But those berries, the V&A is already going to turn into like, you know, they're going to start like dehydration. Some of them is going to have this called noble rot. So they're going to, you know, going to turn into like.
And it sounds bad, but it's actually
Very good. Yeah.
This is really yummy.
That is beautiful.
So it's very floral because of the V&A.
Yep.
And
honeysuckle.
A lot of honeysuckle. Yeah. So the sweetness is 130 grams per liter. So that means if you take 1 liter and remove the sugar, it's 130 grams, which is a lot.
Is this a percentage of residual sugar?
Yeah, so it's 13% residual sugar.
Okay.
So now you don't feel it when you taste it. It's like nice.
Yeah, it isn't sickeningly sweet. It's beautiful. It's
No, it doesn't taste like cough syrup.
Well, listen, I think we're going to probably wrap this up while we have a little bit of wine in our glass. We can cheers. Is that cool? I like to make a toast to your grandparents to get you started. And boy, you come a long way. A guy with two suitcases.
And broken wheels.
Heading to Duelton like a hitman.
At the Motel 6.
And God bless your journey. Awesome job. You knocked it out of the park.
Thank you so much. Cheers. And join us next time on Inside the Bunghole.